Catch the Fire, Family Information Raising Expectation Podcast by the NOPBC. For more information, visit www.nopbc.org.
Family Information Raising Expectations, brought to you by the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children. Catch the Fire as we discuss transitions.
All right, everyone. Hello, and welcome to our second National Organization of Parents of Blind Children Family Information Call. My name is Melissa Riccobono, and I'm the president of the Maryland Parents of Blind Children, a board member for the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, and your host for this evening's call. My husband and I, who happen to be blind, are the parents of three children. Our son Austin is sighted, and he's in third grade. Our daughter Oriana is in kindergarten, and our daughter Elizabeth is in half-day preschool program. And both Oriana and Elizabeth are blind. I realize it will be a little while before Oriana and Elizabeth are ready to transition into middle school or high school, but I know this is a topic which is important to all of you and can bring out a lot of questions, stress, and anxiety. Also, I remember making the transition as a blind child myself. For the most part, I was able to navigate them successfully, but this is because I had great teachers and, most important, a wonderfully supportive family behind me who pushed me, sometimes fighting a bit, beyond my comfort zone so that I could learn the skills that I needed. I'm extremely excited and honored to be your host tonight in order to connect you with two wonderful ladies, Michelle Chacon and Sheila Koenig, who will begin to answer some of your questions and, I hope, relieve some of your stress and anxiety. We will be sharing contact information for our speakers, so you can get in touch with them after the call is over if you'd rather do it that way. So without further ado, let's go on to our first speaker. Michelle Chacon is a teacher of blind students and an orientation and mobility specialist in the Adams 50 School District in Colorado. She has been working in this position for the past 9 years and provides services for students who range in age from 3 to 21. Michelle has two master's degrees. Both degrees are in special education, and her second degree has an emphasis in blindness education and orientation and mobility. Before working for Adams 50, Michelle was a teacher of blind students in New Mexico, a paraprofessional, and a home management instructor. Michelle has four children, all girls, who are grown and have families of their own. Michelle is a wonderful role model for her students, and she provides practical, down-to-earth advice to parents and students because she is able to draw not only on her education, but also on her personal experience. Yes, if you have not guessed it, Michelle happens to be blind herself. This evening, Michelle is here to discuss the transition from elementary school to middle school and middle school to high school. Michelle, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the call with us this evening.
Thank you very much for having me. First of all, I just want to say I'm sorry about my voice. I've had this terrible cold, so bear with me on that.
Oh. Well, we're glad that you could be here.
Yes.
So let me start with our first question. In general, what do you think are the most important skills for kids who are blind or have low vision to learn in middle school so that they are ready to, elementary school, so that they are ready to transition into middle school and also into high school? So I guess it's sort of a two-part question. You know, what should kids in fourth, fifth grade be learning, and then what should kids, as they're in middle school, be learning so that all these transitions can be as smooth as possible?
You bet. One of the most important things is self-advocacy, I believe, and it definitely needs to start even at home, getting the kids to speak up for what they want or need, to also help guide them through different tasks that they can start doing on their own. One of the things that I think happens way too often for the elementary level students is materials magically appear in front of them when it's time for them to do their work. They need to start learning where to find their materials, to get up and get their materials on their own, to be able to start getting things ready to go for just as their classmates do. If they are not sure where something is or do not understand what the teacher is asking, they need to start learning about asking for assistance. What did you write on the board? What is the project about? Can you describe that picture? Some of those kinds of things. I like to role model a lot for them. I still do it with some of the kids that I work with in high school. It's like an ongoing progress, and it will evolve. And it is definitely very individualized for every single student. You know where their abilities are. You want to push them. We want to push them to be their very, very best. And we want to start with getting them out of their comfort zone, for sure. We want them to know that they can advocate and they can move about the class and they can get the materials. And then this will then transfer as they start learning and preparing for middle school. As they start going to middle school, it's not hanging out in one class anymore. They have to start transitioning between classes. So mobility skills are crucial, getting the kiddos out there in their elementary school setting, getting familiar with how to navigate on their own. And when they start getting into middle school, it's not a bad idea to start getting them over there to visit the school, and then over the summer, plan a few trips over there, especially once their schedule gets set, because then they are able to start going through, figuring out their route. How are they going to get from class to class as independently as possible, and meeting their teachers, and start talking with the teachers about some of their needs. One of the most ideal things that we love to try to do is try to get some of our kids to be such good self-advocates that they could start thinking about being a big participant in their IEP by the age of 14, so that they could start saying, this is my goal, this is my meeting, this is about my life, my future, this is what I want. And we want to try to give them as many tools as we can to get them there, you know, through Braille, through cane skills, through technology, access. And of course, our self-advocacy.
Wow, that sounds great. And you did mention that it's very individualized based on the student, obviously, and their needs. But you've covered a lot of skills. And I'm assuming that, you know, these skills would just feed right into good goals that should be on an IEP or might want to consider having on an IEP for a student who's transitioning to middle school. Are there any other goals that you can think of that would be good, aside from self-advocacy, good O&M goals, those types of things?
One of the things that definitely you want to keep in mind and keep your TV eyes on top of it is throughout the school year, we're working so hard on academics and trying to just keep up to pace, keep them on top of their assignments, getting the work done, and it seems like there's never a lot of time to do extra things, such as like some self-help skills. And these are some of the things that fall in what they call expanded core, and these consist of, you know, are these kiddos able to dress themselves, groom themselves, brush their own teeth? Are they able to prepare a simple snack? Are they able to do some basic chores at home? And if the parents need some kind of assistance with this, they need to speak up and definitely reach out to the TVI to help plan some of these goals for these kiddos. Some of these goals could be met by training facilities that offer summer programs for our kids around the country, one in Minnesota, one in Louisiana, and of course in Colorado. They have wonderful summer programs that offer lots of training, so if you talk to your teachers and talk about expanded core and talk about the needs that these kids need to be as independent as their sighted peers in regards to every aspect of life, socially, emotionally. There's all these goals that keep coming up. You know, you want them to be well-rounded. And for our kids to have that ability, to have that same competitive level, they need to be able to have access to participate and learn how to do those skills. And those skills are offered in a lot of our, like I said, our summer programs. And so that could be something that could be written into an IEP that could then help get our kids the training that they need.
That's great. And I'm sure Sheila will also be mentioning summer programs, because not only do we have programs for middle schoolers, we also have programs for high school students as well. So let me just go back. You had talked a little bit about transitioning into the middle school building, because, of course, most of the time when you're transitioning into middle school, not always, but a lot of times it means actually going into a new physical location. It means needing to move from class to class, needing to go to the cafeteria for lunch and gym and all that type of thing. And you talked about learning your routes, which I think is really important. But as an O&M instructor, I'm wondering sort of your approach. I guess I'm kind of questioning route travel versus sort of getting that big picture of the whole school building and sort of how things relate to one another. I'm thinking, for example, if there's, I don't know, a big traffic jam in a hallway, it might be a really good idea so that or that a middle schooler would know, oh, I can take this other hallway and come the back way to my class. So how might a student sort of get that bigger picture of the building sort of as a whole instead of just learning one route, this is the way I always go to this class?
That's correct. I said the wrong thing on route. I realized that after. when we go in the summertime before school starts, I like to do that because the halls are clear. We have time to check everything out, go every single hallway, find out where the office is, how many ways can you get to the cafeteria, which hallway is the literacy hallway, the math hallway, the science hallway. Okay, how are you going to find it from this end of the hallway? How are you going to find it from the stairwell? How are you going to find it, you know, and giving them quizzes and meet me back at the front door and all these kind of games we play so they can get comfortable and be able to locate their classroom. And we don't do this all in one day. We try to take at least 3 to 5 visits, depending on the kiddos, to get in there and spend time in the school, getting familiar with the entire school itself, and knowing how they're going to be going, you know, what's first hour, what's second hour, what's third hour kind of thing, when is their lunch, and all of that, and where they go at the end of the day. So that they're pretty comfortable, so once the hallways get crowded, they're not going to be too turned around, hopefully.
Yeah.
I'll still be there with them usually the first couple of days to make sure that they're settled in, and then they do pretty well after that.
So that's good. So maybe having that as part of the IEP discussion that, you know, somebody should maybe be with the student the first couple of days just to make sure that that sort of transition between classes is happening the way that it should. That's a good point.
I was just going to say making sure the TBI meets with the teacher or the student meets with the teacher. I've tried this a couple of times, and it's worked with some and not with all, where the student wrote a little paragraph about him or herself and said, I am so-and-so. I have XYZ vision. I need assistance in the following areas, kind of like a little accompanying accommodation note, personal note from themselves to share with their teacher. And I also like to meet with the teachers to talk to them about their accommodations and to make sure that we're on the same page before the school year starts. Because once the school year starts, it's a nightmare to make sure that the kiddos are getting what they need sometimes.
I like that idea of the child writing the paragraph themselves. That's a really good idea. So let's switch gears a little bit. As everybody probably knows, the middle school years are the start of adolescence, and during this time, students often care more about the approval of their friends and want to do more with their friends and their families. This is a normal part of life, and it is a crucial transition toward independence. Sometimes, though, kids who are blind or have low vision have a hard time developing friendships, joining extra school activities, etc. How do you help your students to find their place socially, and what advice would you give their parents?
A lot of times when I, before we get to middle school, we start talking about interests. We try to find out the different clubs that are available at the middle school, and I try to get them to join at least one. Sometimes we're successful, and sometimes we are not, depending on the kiddo. I also like, it seems like in my district so far, we've been pretty lucky where a lot of the teachers like to do group activities, and so she never gives the kiddos, quite a few of them anyway, they never really give the kiddos a chance to pair up with their buddies. They have to count off, or they have different ways so that they have to come together and group up with other students that they do not know. And that kind of helps facilitate some of the conversation around getting them to work together. When they are able to, or willing to join clubs, that's really a good start. in the elementary. I haven't done it so much in the middle or high school because the kiddos are so self-conscious at that point. But in elementary, I usually stand up in the class and I introduce myself and I tell the kids I'm going to be coming in and out of the room. And so I work with a certain student, and but this student likes to do X, Y, Z, and their favorite color is this, and they like to play these kind of games, and who else likes to do this kind of stuff, and just trying to incorporate, like, some interaction to get them to start wanting to go over and conversate with the kiddo. Middle school is definitely tricky because there's times when I've gotten some kiddos to come over, and then my student will just shut down and say, I don't want to deal with that, you know, so I think it's definitely an ongoing progress to keep them active and willing to try to work with their peers.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough one. I don't think there's any easy answers. I do think, though, I like the idea of really looking at the interests, because that's sort of where it all starts. And if you're in a club and you find other friends that are interested in the same activity, I think that does help as a springboard. But, you know, the teenage years are hard because sometimes you have friends who have been your friends since elementary school, and all of a sudden you get to middle school and you either just don't see them as much anymore, or they just decide they don't want to be your friend anymore. I mean, it's turbulent for everybody. So I think that that's really important also to sort of keep in mind for parents and for kids, that middle school can just be a tough time in general. But it does get better. It does.
Yeah, it does.
So let's move on a little bit, because of course there's a big difference between a sixth grader who's just entering middle school and an eighth grader who is getting ready to transition to high school. What goals do you suggest for eighth graders to have on their IEPs, if there's anything that's different between the sixth graders entering in, so that they can transition into high school as smoothly as possible?
I'm really hoping that we can get more responsibility and organization on their shoulders so that they can keep up with their materials, have notebooks for each class, or if they have a Braille note or a computer, have folders for their assignments, you know, keeping track, keeping organized, staying accountable, knowing what to do, knowing how to advocate in case they need an extra support or extra time or anything like that. Just starting to plan some good stuff, because in the high school IEPs, we get that added piece of the transition goals, you know, about career, you know, independent living, rec and leisure, and, of course, I'm working on the fourth one. Sheila will probably remember it. But those are incorporated in addition to the regular IEP goals that the kiddos need as they start going through their high school years for graduation. And you definitely want to make sure that these kiddos are starting to think, oh, my gosh, you only have, you know, you're going to be going in four more years, and you're going to be off to, you know, something even bigger and better, you know, college or employment or something that you'd like to do. And, you know, this is a fun time to get there. Again, getting them involved, trying to get them into something that they like or enjoy, a club. And continue, again, I can't emphasize enough about the training facilities in the summertime, getting them to participate in things like that. I think it's just overall more intensified as far as organization, accountability, self-advocacy, and things like that. And making sure that they're a big part of their IEP meeting from there on out.
Great advice. Is there anything else you'd like to add, anything I've forgotten or haven't mentioned?
Not off the top of my head, but I'm sure I'll think of it later. If anybody has any questions for me, please feel free to send me information.
We're actually going to save questions till the end of the call, so we'll give you a chance to save your voice a little bit. And we really appreciate very much you taking the time to be on the call. And don't worry, everybody who's on the call, we are definitely saving plenty of time for questions and discussions at the end, so please save your questions. And after our next speaker has a chance to share, I'll remind everybody how they will be able to ask questions. So let's move on to our next speaker, and she'll be discussing the transition from middle school to high school and from high school to college or career. Sheila Koenig grew up in my home state of Wisconsin. She has a master's degree in curriculum and instruction from the University of Minnesota. Sheila was a ninth grade English teacher for 15 years, and this past July, Sheila made a career transition of her own. She is now the transition coordinator for Minnesota State Services for the Blind. In her new position, Sheila works to connect students and their families with resources, programs, and services they will need in order to be successful after high school. As a former educator, however, Sheila understands the importance of gaining skills early in order to make these transitions as smooth and successful as possible. Sheila also happens to be blind, and like Michelle, I'm sure that she uses her personal experiences to guide her when she is talking to students and their families. In her spare time, Sheila enjoys running, cooking, writing, yoga, reading, and watching movies. Sheila, thank you so much for taking the time tonight to share your experiences.
Thank you for having me.
So Michelle shared goals that she thinks many students need on their IEPs when they're entering high school. And did she hit them all, or are there others that you would recommend?
She really did an awesome job of hitting them. I would echo specifically the goal about students to learn about their own blindness, their own visual impairment, know what accommodations they make. One of the things that we see a lot of kids struggling with in their transition from high school to college is not really being able to talk with professors and other people about their blindness and really struggling with the accommodations they need. So starting early so that kids understand their blindness, understand their capabilities, and understand where they should go for resources as well. So I would echo that one from Michelle. And an additional one that I would encourage people to think about is a goal for the student to find out about their rehabilitation agency. In Minnesota, it's State Services for the Blind. And one of the things that state agencies can offer is to pay for some of the summer programs that Michelle mentioned, to pay for some of the assistive technology that kids need outside of school. They often are able to use their own technology that the school provides while they're in school, but don't necessarily have that same assistive technology when they're outside of school. So there are some benefits to partnering with a rehabilitation agency, and now there's such an emphasis on this partnership starting early as age 14. So I've had several teachers that I've connected with actually create goals in the student's IEP to explore the option of the rehab agency and see if it's something that would fit for the kiddo.
Great. That's fantastic. So obviously, Michelle talked about helping students learning their way around a new middle school, and as happens in middle school, you also need to make sure that you learn your way around a new high school building. Is there any other information you would add now that they're a little bit older? Would there be a different way that they would learn a new building possibly, or is it fairly the same? Are there other things that you would add about just learning the physical layout of a new building themselves as they're growing in?
I think Michelle really covered how to go about exploring a building when it's empty as opposed to being full of students. Is it okay if I speak a little bit more broadly about some of the skills to transition both, well, I guess specifically from high school to life after high school?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Okay,
obviously
great.
Travel is a huge part
is
of
one,
living
oh.
in the world. So.
Absolutely, and that's definitely a big component of it. I like to use the metaphor of a bridge as students move from high school into life beyond that, but the metaphor also works as an acronym, so you can tell I'm sort of dealing with my own identity shift, right, from English teacher to state agency worker. But the acronym is BRIDGE, and I really do believe that each of these components of the Bridge, B-R-I-D-G-E, can help kids to make a smooth transition. So the B is basic skills, and those are both the skills that their peers have. Things like in education, we actually focused a lot on the 21st century competencies. So those would include things like digital literacy, communication, collaboration, self-awareness. Those are all of things, a lot of the state standards are connected to those competencies. So every kid, regardless of disability or not, would be reaching those standards. But in addition to that, kids who are blind or have a visual impairment need to have some kind of mode of non-visual literacy, whether it's using Braille, which is one that I highly advocate, even if they have some residual vision. You know, I did not learn Braille until just before my student teaching, and I wondered how I was going to take attendance. I didn't want to hold a piece of paper up in front of my face in front of 30, 14-year-olds, and I knew that Braille was going to be really the way that I could be successful in that area. And I think that it's critical that kids know how to spell, know how to punctuate, and those are difficult things to learn if they're not physically somehow taking in the text letter by letter. We talked about orientation and mobility a lot. That's another basic skill that our kids need, independent living skills. How are they going to clean their dorm room, right? Clean their dorm room, their bedroom. How are they going to cook on their own? And all of these skills are taught in the summer programs that Michelle referenced as well. So just really making sure that as a student with either a visual impairment or blindness, that they have those additional skills. The R in Bridge is role models, and this for me is the most important one. I think that sometimes it can feel kind of isolating to be a kid that's different from a lot of the kids around you. And it is so important for them to see not only that blindness is normal, but that people can have successful, happy lives. One moment that I remember very well is as a kid, feeling like my visual impairment automatically meant that I would bumble around and just not be very competent. And I knew that the person I wanted to be is a person who is articulate and professional, and I couldn't figure out how those things could reconcile until I saw a video that featured a lot of different blind people going to work. And there is a woman who was a lawyer. She was stepping off of a city bus using a long white cane, dressed very professionally, had a briefcase in her other hand, and I just thought in that moment, in that one picture, I thought, oh my gosh, I can be both of those things. I can be someone who is professional, articulate, poised, and I can have all of those things even with a visual impairment, even being blind. So finding role models, finding mentors that your children can connect with in order for them to see what's possible. The I in Bridge is initiative, so problem-solving skills, confidence, the advocacy piece that Michelle mentioned. It's important for them to realize that it's okay to get up and explore their environment and not just sit around and wait for someone else to give them the next task to do. So that initiative is something that's going to really help them stand out positively in college and on the job. The D is discovery, so allowing kids to see what's possible, taking them on college visits, having them job shadow people in professions they might be interested in, just really letting them explore and discover. The G is goal setting. So as Michelle mentioned, really giving more and more responsibility to the student to manage their own IEP meeting, let them set the goals, let them set the direction, with input from the entire team, but really taking on that responsibility for themselves. And not only should that happen in the IEP meeting, but if they are working with a state agency, just to be extra confusing, we call those things IPEs, Individualized Plan for Employment. So the student should also be the person who directs that plan and sets the goals for that plan. And then the E in Bridge is experiences. So really helping your students, your children, find experiences in internships, volunteering, summer work experience, paid work experience, so that they're building their own repertoire of experiences, and they can draw on that in order to show confidence in the future. So I know that's a lot, and I apologize, but I really like the framework of Bridge to kind of get at all of those really important pieces.
I think that answered a lot of the questions that I had. So thank you very much for that, and I'm sure it's very helpful for the parents that are here on the call listening. Let's talk a little bit about experiences in Bridge, and obviously getting involved in activities in high school is in some ways even more important than getting involved in middle school, because many colleges look not only at academics but also at school and community involvement when they're making acceptance decisions. What suggestions do you have to help students get involved? Let's do, first of all, in extracurricular activities or in the community, and then we'll go into work experience in a minute because that's another extremely important part, and I don't want to leave that one out.
Great. I know that the high school, well, I actually taught in a middle school. Ninth grade was in a middle school in our district, and we worked with transitioning the kids from the middle school to the high school. And one of the things that always happened before the start of their, what would be sophomore year in high school, is a welcome fair. And at that welcome fair, which took place at the high school, there were tables set up so that students could walk around and find out about all of the different clubs and organizations that exist at the high school. I remember one student saying to me, "Hey, there's even a Harry Potter club," and it was kind of a cool thing for that student to see that an interest he had that he didn't think would really lead them to him to connect with other people actually did. So finding out if the high school your children are attending have some kind of welcome fair, often at open houses or conferences for parents, you can pick up information about clubs and organizations at those events as well. So that's one piece I'd recommend. I think really encouraging students to try something new. Part of what being a teenager is, it's part of why I love kids that age, is because they don't know who they are yet, and they're really trying to figure that out. So let them know that it's okay to try one club or activity for a while, and you might want to work with them on setting what would be a reasonable length of time for them to give it a shot. And if it's not something they're interested in, allow them to pick something different, help them find something different, so that they keep exploring and discovering who they are. And I think also looking outside of the school, so think about any other places where your kids might have interests, whether it's in a church or through volunteering or other activities. I truly have found that people are willing to make things work. For example, I knew nothing about it and really struggled in my first class to follow all of the various descriptions. And when I talked with the instructor and just said, "Could we meet for 20 minutes before the class next time so that I can really understand some of the basic poses that you keep going back to?" She said, "Absolutely." So don't shy away from an activity because at first blush, you're not sure how it could work. People really are willing to try to figure that out with you. So those are some of my thoughts around extracurriculars and community.
And that really goes back to what Michelle was saying, too, and works so beautifully together about self-advocacy, because maybe you as a parent are sort of helping to model that self-advocacy at first, but I would guess that by the end of high school, it really would be needing to be the student that's really sort of initiating those things. And that is hard. That's not the easiest thing to do, especially if you're shy. No one ever believes this, but I was very shy in high school, and that was very hard. That was probably one of the hardest things for me, and
well,
I mean,
that's why
the biggest thing that made a difference was just doing it, having to do it.
Yep. It's why I loved Michelle's idea about writing a note. We often did that as teachers, too, is just say, send us an email about who you are. Even to make a goal, it wouldn't necessarily have to be an IEP goal, but just a goal with your student to send one email each week to one of your teachers about a question you have, or just really teaching them that there are different ways to communicate and that really empowering them to do so. That's what it's about. It's about showing them that they have their own power.
Absolutely. So Michelle mentioned the summer programs, and I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the summer programs. Another aspect of high school life is employment, and I know not only do the summer programs do a wonderful job of getting kids basic skills, but they also do, a lot of them have an employment component as well, which is extremely exciting and a chance for kids to actually earn some real money and get some real work experience. So can you talk to us about the summer programs, where they're located, and just a little bit about what's offered?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm most familiar with the one in Minnesota, but we also have summer programs located in Louisiana and Colorado. And I'm sure that there are others as well, but those are the three that I know most about. There are so many different summer program options available right now, and I would just encourage parents to look online, to make phone calls, to talk with people directly, and where you can actually go and visit the places to just see how they're different. And look at which ones are really going to help your students become their best selves and the advocates that you want them to be. So the program here in Minnesota, and I believe it's true also for Colorado and Louisiana, the longest one is an 8-week program, which focuses for the first 4 or 5 weeks on some of the skills that we've already talked about, and then the last 3 or 4 weeks of the program is spent at a job. So I know of students who have worked as a host in a restaurant, worked at a pet groomer's, worked in nursing homes. I think it's important to remember, too, that those first jobs aren't necessarily our dream jobs, right? It's not that. I know some students have said, well, I don't want to work in a restaurant. Well, okay. It's good to know that, but what's important is to get some paid work experience on their resume. So getting that first job, even if it's one that they might not necessarily like all that well, will just be a stepping stone for the next job and the next. In addition to utilizing those summer programs to look for jobs, I think it's really about who you know. So brainstorming either people in your family or neighbors who you know work in different places. Maybe you have a cousin that works at McDonald's or a neighbor that works at Target, and you can ask that person to let you know if there are any openings, or even have that person set up an interview with a person either at the McDonald's or at the Target, so that your child can get in and do an informational interview and drop off a resume. It's so much about who you know, and once you can make those connections, it's a step in that direction. And then lastly, just really think about the skills that your child has and build on those skills. If you know they're really good with animals, for example, investigating a job opportunity at a humane society or pet groomers or another place that deals with animals might be an avenue to pursue. And again, I'm new enough in state agencies that I don't want to make any sort of blanket statements, but earlier I had mentioned how we can help with the purchase of technology and paying for some of these summer programs. Another aspect is to help students find work experience. So if you're connected with your state agency, I think chances are pretty good that another component to add to that plan would be some help finding some of that summer employment.
Yeah, it's a really good time to be a high school student with all the new laws that have come across.
That is true.
Starts at 14. You know, it that didn't used to be that way, even just a couple of years ago. So it's very exciting, and thank goodness that the federal government is really recognizing that transition does start at the beginning of high school, and you can't just plop at an IEP meeting when a child is 18 or even 16 and start these things. This is really an ongoing process. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I wish it could even start earlier, but it's great that we're moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Sheila, for your willingness to share with us this evening. Let me just ask you one more question.
You.
If people want to contact you after this call is over to maybe be reminded of what Bridge means or anything else that you could do for them, how would they reach you? What's the best way?
The best way is going to be through an email. So I'll go ahead and spell out my entire email address. It is sheila.koenig@state.mn.us. So it's sheila.koenig@state.mn.us.
And if you didn't get that, we will be putting that up on our Facebook page as well, if that's okay, Sheila, just so that people can get
absolutely.
If they need to after the call's over.
Yeah,
Let me ask the same thing of Michelle. If people would like to reach you, Michelle, after this call is over, what's the best way that they can reach you?
Absolutely. Email will probably be the best as well. And I'd like to give my home email. It's rascal@angel2@gmail.com.
So rascal.angel2@gmail.com.
Yes.
Great. Well, now it's the time that everybody's been waiting for. We have time for questions for Michelle Chacon and Sheila Koenig. If you have a question, please press *6. And when you hear the message that you've been unmuted, that means it's your turn to ask a question. Please state your name and the state that you live in, and then your question.
Hello?
Hello. Who's this?
Is this Penny Duffy?
Hi, Penny. How are you?
Good. My question is, experiences are really important, but how do you fit the time in between academics and making sure you have time for the blindness skills and all that? I mean, I'm finding that it's really hard to overbook my kids.
Great. So why don't we start with Michelle? Do you have any thoughts for Penny?
Yes, that's one of the reasons why I thought a lot of time the summer is a good time to be able to plan some of those things. If some of our kiddos are too young to get into like a middle or high school, or there's not an elementary summer camp available, if you're able to work with your TVI to get them to incorporate some skills into the ESY or into the orientation and mobility piece, I know for myself, the kids that I work with that have orientation and mobility, we do it after school. We try to incorporate a lot of the blindness skills at that time. you know, after school, because during school, of course, there's just not enough time. And that's why I guess I go back to the training during the summertime if they're able to get into a summer camp. That definitely helps a lot to get some of those needs met.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, it is a struggle for everyone, right? Even adults, I think, struggle with balance. So maybe sitting down with your student and prioritizing and saying, you know, it's okay if maybe this year we have to let something go and come back to it next year, maybe not a whole year. I guess that sounds like a long time when I say it aloud, but maybe we can hold something off for a month. A lot of kids, I think, can tend to spend so much time on homework, too, because it just takes longer. And letting them know that things don't have to be absolutely perfect, that the balance they have and need in life is equally important. It should be as high quality as they want it to be. But letting them know that they don't have to have everything done to perfection.
That's a really good point. Other questions? Again, if you have a question, please press *6. Oh, here's a question. Hello. Who's that?
Hey, my name is Jennifer. I'm actually in North Carolina. And I have a 13-year-old daughter who is in 7th grade, and she just turned 13, and she has hit that teenage stage, like a big brick wall. So my question is, I guess I could say we're kind of struggling with the self-advocacy skills. She has had Braille and TBIs throughout the years that have, like you said, handed papers to her. They just appeared out of thin air, and she just turns and hands it, you know, right back. Has never had to file anything, you know, or do things for herself. So over the last couple years, you know, we're really pushing that, but I still cannot get her to go to her teachers to ask questions. She turns in assignments through email, so I don't know if this is just a teenager, you know, pushing back, or, you know, is there anything else that I can do to help push that self-advocacy for herself?
Do you know if she would be more comfortable sending an email to the teacher, or would it be the same kind of resistance?
Yeah, I mean, I would still have to probably tell her, okay, you need to send a, you know, an email to such teacher. I would have to sit there mm-hmm. with her and do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. she's got the computer skills. You know, she's on JAWS, you know, on her laptop.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I think part of it, too, is she doesn't know if an assignment is missing. Or, you know, we have mm-hmm. a program called PowerSchool where all of the assignments get put onto, and it's not very accessible. Mm-hmm. So she's not able mm-hmm. to check her grades to see mm-hmm. if something is mm-hmm. missing. So it takes either myself or the TBI to say, you know, where is this assignment? And, you know, she'll say, I don't know. Well, go to your teacher, go ask. Or she has crates in every single classroom where all of her assignments are supposed to be. But she has a very hard time finding stuff in these crates.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Well, I have a kiddo that didn't want to reach out to his teachers and things like that as well, kind of pretty similar. And so we started pretty small, where we asked him, or the student needs to email the teacher, can you tell me the assignments that are due for this week?
Mm-hmm.
And they would respond to that student via email. And then the student would have to go and find in their little area folder, whether it's on their computer, you know, I don't know if the assignment is going to be electronic or in Braille, but they need to locate it. But if you start in little steps, today you need to find this assignment in your crate, or today
right.
you need to pick up this assignment and complete it and turn it in. And when you turn it in, you need to ask politely if the teacher could return your email with the grade that you did. And then
right.
you need to keep in track, you know, and just little baby steps, because when I tried mm-hmm. to put too much, responsibility
that gets
on that.
Overwhelming.
It will shut down.
Yeah.
And you don't get very far.
Yeah.
Well, and often what I was just going to add that often what we would do with students is, just in agreeing with what Michelle said about baby steps, is it's okay to sit down with your student and write the email together and then have her actually do the command, you know, the control, enter, the send.
Right.
Like, that's giving her the responsibility for that action. And gradually over time, she can take more of that on herself too.
Okay. Is it okay? I mean, most of the assignments are put on each teacher's website, which she has bookmarked on her iPad, because most of the time she can look up assignments, but they're not very detailed, I've noticed. I mean, is it wrong to ask these teachers to put more detail on assignments?
No.
No,
it's not wrong at all. I always said to kids, there are no bad questions. It's important to ask for the information that you need. So maybe it's just a clarifying email that she sends to the teacher to get more details. Maybe find out if the teacher is giving details in another way. Maybe they're not on that exact assignment, but are they on some other handout that's given in class?
Right. Yeah, I have a feeling she's losing a lot of instruction during class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have a lot of time, and we've actually created just a Word document, and it's her agenda.
Mm-hmm.
All the other students have a spiral notebook where they write down assignments. We've tried,
yeah.
You know, apps and everything else, and nothing is really accessible that she can use very well. So actually one of the teachers said, well, what about just a Word document and create a to-do list? So we did that.
Yeah, great.
And so she writes, you know, every day she checks it, sometimes it's a couple times a day. But she doesn't have time during class to get this document out and write on it. So she does it at home, or she'll do it in the morning first thing. We started doing that, but if she has a question about an assignment that has just been handed out, she won't ask. She doesn't raise her hand and won't ask. You know, when she gets home, I'm like, well, what is this? What are you supposed to do? Well, I don't know. That's all I am.
And that's when I would suggest sending an email to the teacher with questions about it.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a really good topic, and I wish we had more time to really delve into it, but, you know, maybe Sheila or Michelle can be resources outside the call for other ideas.
Yeah.
Maybe there's other parents that have questions. And also, if you're on our Facebook group, I would really recommend, or our Blind Kid Listserv, I would really recommend you bringing up that question on either of those places, because it would be great to kind of keep this conversation going with other parents and other professionals who might be in those forums as well. We do have a couple of other questions, so why don't we go to our next question?
Carlton from Pennsylvania.
Hello.
Hi. What we're struggling with is, schools not necessarily giving accessible documents at all, or definitely not on time, but I'm struggling with how much more my daughter needs to do to get her assignments than other kids who just have them placed on their desk in front of them. Ninth grade, I mean, they have laptops. They should be using the Blackboard, Canvas, like Blackboard, the learning system. They're not. They're just doing it old school. And I'm just struggling with how much more should we be demanding of her than other kids, because I want her to be prepared, but I don't want her to have to go through so many more hoops just because she needs accessible documents. What's the balance?
I'm always in the teacher's area. I guess I shouldn't say that very well. I'm always emailing them. I feel like it's my job as a TBI to stay on top of them. And, of course, there's always going to be, when I walk in the room, they're like, oh, my gosh, we were supposed to do this. And I'm sorry I didn't get it to you in time to adapt for the kiddo. And nothing drives me bananas more than that. I say right away, I'm like, do you have a Word document? you email it to the kiddo right now. We're going to pull it up on the JAWS. Or you're going to read it out loud to the class. Everybody's going to have to work off of what you're reading. And we kind of go back and forth. It's been an ongoing work in progress, but I still want the kiddos. I know on their IEP sometimes we get time and a half, so they could get a little extra time to get some of their stuff done. But I don't want it to turn into these kiddos thinking that they don't have to turn it in for another week because they've got extra time, you know, either. So it's got to be a fine balance, but you've got to make sure. I wish I had the right answer, but just I think that maybe I have to stay on top of the teachers to make sure these materials get in into them on time because it's our job.
And at least it does seem like more is electronic now, so I think it's okay to ask them to email it to her. Can she access her email in the classroom?
Yes, she can. Yes, she can.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that might be one way, even just ask, like Michelle said, ask the teacher to email it to her. I mean, because teachers do forget. I know that, just right. Having been there. But at the same time, part of our job is to make sure all of our kids have what they need.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, it is getting to be close to 9 o'clock, so I do want to make sure that we try to stay on time. We know that an hour is a long time to be on the phone, and we hope that this has given you a great deal of information, and it has relieved at least some of your anxiety or stress about all of these transitions that we've talked about. The National Organization of Parents of Blind Children is a great place to network with other families in order to get these types of questions and so many others answered. We are so glad that you joined us for this call, and we hope that you will continue to reach out and stay connected with us so that we can continue to support you and your children. If you enjoyed the topic of this call, you should begin making plans to be with us at our national conference this summer. Our national conference takes place each year in conjunction with the National Convention of the National Federation of the Blind. This year, the convention will be held from June 30th to July 5th in Orlando, Florida. Our parent conference begins early in the morning on June 30th, and the topic of this year is, believe it or not, transitions. So it fits right in with the theme of our call this evening. Not quite sure what convention is all about. Not sure if you really want to attend. Well, please consider joining us for our next call on Wednesday, March 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, when our topic will be the National Convention and its impact on the lives of blind and low-vision children and their families. I am excited to share that one of our guests on this next call will be Mark Riccobono, who is the president of the National Federation of the Blind. And yes, if you notice that we share the last name, that's because he is my husband and also a parent of two blind children. We hope you will contact Michelle or Sheila with any questions that you have and that you will continue this conversation on our Facebook group or on our Blind Kid Listserv. Please feel free to share with other parents what you have learned tonight. Thank you for spending time learning and sharing with us this evening. We look forward to your participation in our next call on March 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern and in many other future calls. Have a great evening.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Family Information Raising Expectations, brought to you by the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children and the National Federation of the Blind. Please find us online at nopbc.org and at nfb.org. We also hope you'll join us on our next Catch the Fire conference call. Specific information about these calls can be found on the NOPBC's Facebook page, as well as on our website, on Twitter, and on our Blind Kid Listserv. In the meantime, if you like what you heard on this podcast, check out Future Reflections, a magazine for parents and teachers of blind children, Voice of the Nation's Blind, a new podcast from the NFB, the Braille Monitor, the monthly magazine of the National Federation of the Blind, and the Presidential Release, a monthly message from Mark Riccobono, President of the National Federation of the Blind. All of these can be found as podcasts by searching National Federation of the Blind.